Hey guys, and welcome to a special edition of the Money Podcast. This is called Money News You'll Really Use. The concept is simple enough. I subscribe to tons of financial publications, and every month I read hundreds of articles. Then once every couple of weeks, I give you the highlights to bring you up to speed on the important news that affects your money. Think of it as an investor's almanac. In part one of today's show, we'll discuss where we are now and what's happened in the markets this month. In part two, we'll go over important news stories. I've got a little cold going, so pardon my voice here. In part three, we'll go over recent investments the three of us have made. I'm your host, Stacey Johnson. My co-host, as usual, is Miranda Marquette. Hi, Miranda.
Heyo.
Listening in and sometimes contributing is producer and novice investor, Aaron Freeman. Say hi, Aaron.
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing today?
Can you guys tell I have a cold?
Yep.
Totally. My voice is weird. You can tell?
Oh, yeah. That's all right.
Oh, well, okay. Well, I'll do the best I can if my voice cracks. Deal with it. Okay, so let's get the ball rolling. But first, a disclaimer. We are going to discuss specific investments in this show, including things we personally invested in. But these are not recommendations, because what's right for us may not be right for you. Before you invest in anything, do your own research. Make your own decisions. Okay, let's get back to the news. Let's start with where we are now and where we were at the beginning of this month. It is now June 15th, 2021. We're about halfway through the trading day and halfway through June. Now, the Dow Jones Industrial Average at the beginning of June was around 34,500. Today it's 34, as we speak anyway, it's 34,247. So it's down by almost 300 points, about 0.8%. So the last 2 weeks, the Dow's fallen 0.8%. The NASDAQ, which represents a lot of technology stocks, has not fallen. It is higher by about 2.4% today than it was 2 weeks ago. The Russell 2000, that's your gauge for smaller companies, is up about 1.7% so far this month. The 10-year bond yield, and that 10-year bond yield is important because it's what a lot of interest rates are based on, including mortgage rates. That was 1.58% at the beginning of June. It is now 1.51%. So interest rates have actually dropped by 4% since the beginning of June. Any of that a surprise to you guys?
Not really. I mean, you know, we're all just still kind of waiting to see what happens, you know, later, whether we get a big crash somewhere, whether, you know, interest rates start rising, it's inflation kicks in. So we're all just kind of waiting, but I don't think we're quite there yet. I don't think everything's worked its way through.
Yeah, the Federal Reserve is meeting tomorrow. And they say that they may start giving hints on doing a little tapering, in other words, a little less support for the economy, so that interest rates may start going up. It's not going to happen anytime soon, but they may start talking about doing some things that may make interest rates rise.
Talking about it.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm kind of surprised, I have to say, that the interest rates are lower now than they were at the beginning of the month. There's been a lot of talking, including on our podcast, about interest rates going up or because of inflation concerns. So we're going to have some of that in the news today. So I'm kind of surprised that interest rates have dropped. I thought that they've gotten as high as like 1.7% this year on the 10-year, and now they're back down to 1.5.
I have stopped trying to pretend like anything makes sense the last 2 years. Like, I've just stopped trying to pretend like anything makes sense and anything's reacting like it should be. And if you want proof that, you know, that markets are not rational, the last 2 years are your proof.
Yeah, it's true. It's really hard to predict what's happening. And you know, actually, another thing that's a little surprising, we've been talking about how there's been a rotation out of the tech stocks, which would be hurt by rising interest rates, you know, stocks like Apple and Google and things like that, and a movement into the traditional smokestack stocks, which traditionally would have more of the Dow Jones Industrial stocks in it. And so, but as it's happened this month, though, so far at least, the tech stocks have done better than the Dow Jones Industrial, the 30 stocks that represent the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Little stocks we were hoping would do better, and they have. And that's why I bought, and I think we all probably have some small stock index fund. We'll go over that in a minute. Okay, so you ready? You guys ready for your news quiz for the week?
Oh, sure. Oh dear.
Okay, now this is the part of our show where I was saying at the beginning that I read lots and lots of articles. I'm sure other people here do too, but I write down articles I think are important. Now I'm going to read back four. I'm just going to do four. We usually do five. I'm going to do four today. because my to save my voice a little bit. I'm going to do four of news stories, and then our other two hosts here are going to determine which one of those news stories they think is the most important one. Okay, the first news story comes from the first day of June from the Wall Street Journal. The headline is "Battle Brews Over Banning Natural Gas to Homes." I found this is an interesting story. Here's a quote. "A growing fight is unfolding across the United States as cities consider phasing out natural gas for home cooking and heating, citing concerns about climate change. And states are pushing back against these bans. Major cities, including San Francisco, Seattle, Denver, and New York, have either enacted or proposed measures to ban or discourage the use of the fossil fuel in new homes and buildings, 2 years after Berkeley, California, passed the first such prohibition in the United States. The bans, in turn, have led Arizona, Texas, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Kansas, and Louisiana to enact laws outlawing such municipal prohibitions in their states before they can spread, arguing that they're overly restrictive and costly. Ohio's considering a similar measure." I thought that was an interesting story.
Yeah, that is.
Okay, now, on the third from Bloomberg, here's the story. Your headline is, "Building a home in the U.S. has never been more expensive." Quote from the story, "From lumber to paint to concrete, the cost of almost every single item that goes into building a house in the U.S. is soaring. In some cases, the price increases have topped 100% since the pandemic began. This could be industry killing if things continue going this way," said one contractor who has had to tack on price increases during construction of anywhere from 40 to 60%, $40,000 to $100,000, primarily due to rising lumber cost. "We're putting projects off. We've got clients that are hitting their price ceiling." Okay, your third story. This was on the 10th of June from the Wall Street Journal. U.S. consumer prices rose strongly again in May. That's their headline. Here's a quote. "U.S. consumer prices continued to climb strongly in May, surging 5% from a year ago to reach the highest annual inflation rate in nearly 13 years. Prices for used cars and trucks leapt 7.3% from the previous month, driving one-third of the rise in the overall index. The indexes for furniture, airline fares, and apparel also rose sharply in May." And just today, the producer price index also was up as much as it's been since they started tracking it. Okay, here's your last story. Story number four, also from the Wall Street Journal. This is interesting because it's in contrast to the other one. Here's your headline. "Lumber prices are falling fast, turning hoarders into sellers. Futures for July delivery ended Monday at $996 per thousand board feet, down 42% from the record of $1,700 reached in early May. That's still more than the pre-pandemic record of $639. Lumber became central to the inflation debate, whether a period of runaway inflation was afoot or high prices were temporary shocks that would ease as the economy improves further from lockdown. The rapid decline in lumber prices suggests a bubble that has burst, and the question now is how low lumber prices will fall." So that was okay. I'm gonna recap, and then you guys can tell me what you think. Okay, on the 1st of June, we had battle brewing over natural gas to homes. On the 3rd, building a home in the U.S. has never been more expensive. On the 10th, U.S. consumer prices rose strongly again in May, and then on the 15th today, lumber prices are falling fast, turning hoarders into sellers. Which one of those things do you think was most important?
I'm thinking U.S. consumer prices rising.
I think either that one or the home building one. The hard thing about the consumer prices rising is that it's like they're comparing it to last year. And we all know that it's a weird thing from last year to this year because things drop so low. And especially things that you mentioned, cars, airfares, those kinds of prices were very low last year because nobody was doing anything, right? So so it makes sense for them to be higher and have that year-over-year gain. I think the housing thing is super important because, well, I mean, from somebody who, so I sit on the board for a local Habitat for Humanity, and we can't even begin to do, like, we were getting excited because we're like, oh, we can start doing builds again this year with the COVID and, you know, just about, you know, receding and all that kind of stuff. But now we're like, well, we can't start builds this year because we can't predict, nobody, no contractor will guarantee a price beyond 30 days, and everything's so expensive. And so I think that's also an issue when it comes to, like, everybody's talking about how high prices are, how it's difficult to find an affordable house. We've got all these bidding wars all over the place. And so I think that's a big issue too, because what happens when this current real estate bubble finally kind of bursts?
And it looks like I'm reading some stuff that's suggesting that it might, because things are getting unaffordable,
right,
even though
yeah.
there's still a dearth of supply. The demand is starting to fade because people can't afford houses. And you happen to live, Miranda, in one of the most expensive, or one of the, I guess, where the prices have increased the most.
Yeah, I live in an area where it's very, like, the housing prices are very hot. And I was thinking about my landlord and just like, please don't sell the house. Please don't sell the house. Please don't sell the house. And yeah. I talked to him, and he's not planning on selling the house this year, thank goodness. So we're good for another year, kids.
Oh, cool. That's good. That's good. And for those of you who don't know, Miranda lives in Idaho, which is, you wouldn't think would be where the prices were rising the most, but apparently it is.
It's insanity.
Or one
here.
Of them. Yeah, prices rising big time here in South Florida too. Big time. Now, there is one thing. This did not go into our roundup, but this is an interesting story from the New York Times. It was called, the U.S. economy is sending confusing signals. What's going on? And it starts like this. Unemployment's still high, but companies are complaining they can't find workers. Prices are shooting up for some goods and services, but not for others. Supply chain bottlenecks are making it hard for home builders, automakers, and other manufacturers to get the materials they need. A variety of indicators that normally move more or less together are telling vastly different stories about the state of the economy. It's interesting. And this is all because, and correct me if you disagree, but I think this is all because simply of the pandemic. You know, we didn't have, the people weren't shipping. The ships weren't moving across the oceans, carrying goods from Asia to here. People weren't working. Things were getting closed. And now everybody's got all this demand, and the supply, the chains are broken. And it's just causing all kinds of weird things to happen in our economy.
Yeah, there's a lot of shipping issues, and it's still going on. China was short on containers because they were docked here in the U.S. You've got a lot of other Asian markets where all the workers left because of COVID or deceased because of COVID, and it's hard to get these people back and get new workers in line. And there's a lot of boats anchored out in the ocean just waiting to drop off things. And then you've got shortage of truckers to distribute everything. So it's chaotic.
Chaos is the right word. And you know what's weird, though, is the stock market keeps going up. You know, and it's also weird, too, that there's so many stories about inflation, and like including some of the stories I just read. And yet the 10-year bond, which should be the interest rate should be going up if people have inflation fears, is going down. It's just really weird.
I'm just going to repeat what I said at the beginning of this episode.
Yes, yeah.
Nothing makes sense. Nothing matters. And the markets are definitely not rational.
Yeah, they really are.
You know what I found strange is I like looking at graphs of stocks.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times I come across things. And I like looking at that full like lifetime graph just to see what was going on. And I noticed between 2018 and 2019, just before 2020, there were a lot of stocks in a lot of different weird areas. They were actually on a decline. And then all of a sudden now these stocks are way above what they should be.
Yeah.
And I think...
And to me, that's kind of scary.
Yeah. And I think, and I think part of that too is, I mean, we have to look at, to some degree, some level of market manipulation as well. I mean, we've already seen like with AMC and GameStop, like chasing these trends. I mean, eventually it's going to end very badly for lots of people. And I mean, I guess we just kind of have to write it. This is one of those things where we just are kind of, it's going to be weird and probably going to have to write it out. And this is where, looking at your financial plan and looking at your investing plan and looking at your strategy and saying, okay, let's try and stick to these things because it is, it's a little bit weird out there right now.
So let me ask you guys something. Have you bought or sold anything in the last couple of weeks investment-wise? If you have, don't tell me what it is, but just tell me if you've made a move or not.
I've halved it, and I've got cash sitting aside.
Okay, so you have sold something. Miranda, have you done anything?
I have not changed anything. I've not done anything new. Like, I continue to dollar cost average into the usual suspects. You know, just the usual index funds. But I am not, I didn't change anything. I didn't buy anything new. I'm not doing any experimentation. I didn't sell anything. Mostly I did all my selling. Yeah, mostly I did my selling. I pretty much finished the selling spree last month. So like I'm pretty much back to, I'm just looking at everything and going, none of this makes sense. And so, other than like, going to Coinbase and getting like rewards, which is basically just free useless coins that are never going anywhere, going to Coinbase and just getting some rewards for funsies. I haven't changed anything up. I'm back to my base level of, this is how much I set aside in the indexing. This is how I dollar cost average. And I'm just back to like just the basic. I've just reverted back to the basic. And I still have that cash sitting from the selling spree earlier in the year.
Both you guys have sold some. And that's obviously not a bad idea when the market's toppy like it is.
Well, can you guys explain to me what your feelings are on the there's a couple articles that keep popping up about corporate bond debt. Now, this is obviously where, you know, we've put a bunch of stocks. We've all bought stocks in these companies. They've got a lot of play money and interest rates are super low. So companies are like, well, we're going to invest, you know, so we're going to do the whole borrowing thing. And so now we've got about $10.5 trillion of corporate bond debt.
Oh, you're talking about some zombie debt out there.
Oh. Yeah, we got some zombie companies. And
well, hold on one sec.
And everything's like on a knife edge right
because
now.
I've got something I did buy, and it's something I've never bought before in the 40 years that
exciting.
I've been investing. But I'm going to tell you what it is. But you have to wait. You know why? Because we have to sell something in order to stay on the air. We're going to be right back after this commercial message. Okay, we are back. Now, let's address what you said first, Aaron, the debt that's mounting up. And when I said, you know what zombie companies are, you guys? I'm sure you do, but maybe some of our listeners don't. It means companies that would have gone out of business because they're inefficient, inefficiently operated. They're not doing a good job. They would have just gone bankrupt, except they're able to borrow money at such low interest rates because the Federal Reserve is supporting their debt that they stay in business anyway. And that could be obviously it's good for them, but it could be bad for the economy overall to keep companies alive that really shouldn't be. And is that what you were alluding to, Aaron?
Yes. Yes. Those and the ones that are above the zombie status.
Yeah.
There are the junk bonds.
Yeah. And there's usually, you know, just as pride goes before a fall, debt usually goes before a recession. And so you'll find these companies when interest rates ultimately go up, which they ultimately will, not anytime real soon, but sooner or later they will, a lot of these companies will fail.
Right. And let's make sure, too, this is worldwide. This is not just a U.S. problem.
Yeah, because interest rates are low everywhere. So here's what I've bought. That I've never invested in Europe before. That may sound crazy, but I have not. Almost everything I own is a U.S. company. But I did buy, it's called MSCI Europe Small Cap ETF. So I wanted to get into Europe. And I actually wasn't starting off buying a small cap, which means small company ETF, which is an exchange traded fund. But I decided I would get a small cap, but I wanted to be in Europe for a simple reason. We've come out of our pandemic induced recession here in this country. Europe is a little slower. They're a little behind us. They don't have the same inoculation rates. And obviously this is not true of every country, but some of them do not have the high inoculation rates that we have here. So I thought, well, maybe I can get in on a better market in Europe. So I put a little money into this Europe small cap ETF. I figured I'd get a bigger bang for my buck with small cap. There's more risk in smaller companies, but I figured I'd get a bigger bang for my buck. I bought that on the 1st of June, as a matter of fact. It is now the 15th of June, and it's down 2%. So my timing was not perfect. So
right. Anyway. Well, and that's okay. We don't need perfect timing, do we?
True.
You just need to come out ahead over time. We don't need perfect timing.
Now, do you guys have anything in Europe?
Well, I do. Just from the standpoint, I do have a global ETF, so like a global index ETF that's just, you know, stuff that's not the U.S., and that includes some Europe and some Asia. So I have a little bit that way. I don't have anything that's Europe specific in my ETFs, but I do have some, global index ETFs.
Yeah, I only have one, and it's in emerging markets, which is, it's global, but it's emerging markets ETF. And so I don't really have a global fund. The emerging markets ETF I bought in March of 2021, and I'm up about 3.5% on that.
Yeah, I have an emerging market one too. That's it's like the lower percentage of my stock holdings, but yeah, the emerging market ETF, it's always nice to have that just for a little extra growth, perhaps. Once, like you said, though, I mean, there are things like the small caps are going to have a higher degree of volatility and come with a little more risk. The same thing with an emerging in the emerging markets, right? On the one hand, you could get in and see some great growth. On the other hand, it could just fail miserably. So.
And I don't put a lot in these things, but and this is the first time, actually, I think because of doing this podcast, I've started buying ETFs. Because usually, those of you who've listened to this podcast for a while will know that I'm a single stock buyer. I buy and I own about 30 different companies, but I've started just buying some ETFs, and I find that they're not as exciting in terms of how fast they move.
No, they are
But
not.
I feel like this is it, I feel safer. It's a safer thing to do to buy a big basket of stocks instead of putting all your money in one. In fact, speaking of Asia, I bought Baidu.
Oh, nice.
Well, not nice because I paid 200 for it, which I thought was an awesome
And
price.
now it's down.
And now it's at 186. I'm down 7% on that. I bought that at the end of March of this year. And I mean, the day after I bought it, Miranda, it went to 220. I mean, I was up 10% in 24 hours, but now, not so much.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is I mean, I do these little experiments, and it's kind of fun to watch the wild ride because I know it's money that I'm not gonna. I mean, you always feel bad when you lose money, but it's not like gonna devastate me or anything. And so, so it is kind of. I mean, during the experiment phase, it's kind of sexy to be like, I have Dogecoin, but for long-term planning, it's nice to be like, sexy is really overrated. When you're investing,
I don't
sexy is
know. I don't know
super
about that.
overrated when you're investing. I'm just going to stick with my boring old frumpy index ETFs and call it good for
Well,
the
no, okay.
most
Now I
part.
also own the global. No, I'm sorry. That's Global's the name of the company. It's a U.S. infrastructure development ETF, so an infrastructure
Oh.
fund here in the U.S. And I bought that also in the middle of March, and it's up 14%. So all my ETFs have not been losers.
Oh no, yeah, I'm not saying
Oh,
they're
and
all
you know what else?
losers.
We talked about this a long time ago. Small caps, right? We were
Yeah.
talking about how small caps might do well. So I bought the Vanguard Small Cap Value ETF in February, at the end of February. I'm up 11% on that.
Yeah, so I don't consider that super sexy. What I'm talking about is like when people are just like, it's going to the moon.
You mean like Dogecoin?
Like those kind of trendy things where you're just like, and everybody wants to get involved and everybody wants to like talk about it and everything else. Like that kind of sexy. Nobody wants to be like, go find yourself a boring infrastructure fund because the US is crumbling and we're going to have to do it sometime.
That is very true.
So
Okay,
yeah.
let's talk about Nvidia. I bought Nvidia last March of 2020 for $198, and now it's 716. Now that's sexy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously you're a genius.
Obviously.
Or everybody's freaking out over NFTs and crypto mining and they need NVIDIA graphics cards to make it happen.
Which makes me a genius, either way.
Yeah. Well,
Well,
I
it's
did
better
do
be
that Sam
lucky.
Adams play. That Sam Adams when
Oh,
I bought
yeah.
Sam, yeah, I mean that was
You
pretty
quadrupled
solid.
in less than a year, right?
I did quadruple in less than a year. That was insanity.
See, that's luck. Mine was skill.
Oh no, I'm the genius here.
You very well may be.
Neither of us are geniuses, everybody.
Yeah, that is true. But it's better to be lucky than smart. You know what they say.
That's right.
Okay, now, Aaron, you got anything to add? Have you said you sold something. What did you sell?
No, I just halved all my position because I wanted. Okay, here's the deal. Here's the deal. Obviously, I'm not messing with the same amount of money as you guys are because I'm the newbie. And but I will say to listeners, anybody who is thinking about getting into stock buying, here's the deal. I had money in a savings account, and of course, you know how savings accounts grow. I was making like $2 a year, right? And I kept saying to my wife, everything we should put this in the stock market, everything, So when we first started this podcast, I put a little bit in, and that's when we were talking about Ford and all that kind of crap back in the day. And I only put in actually the rest of it, about 11,000 of it, just in the March of this year. So in this short of amount of time, I've taken that small amount and I made about $3,500. And that's a hell of a lot more than it was making sitting in the savings account. So anybody out there who's got money sitting around in their savings account and it's not doing a damn thing, even though I'm still new to this, I'm not doing very well like most people. I mean, if I took all of my money and put it into Ford, I would have made a ton of cash. But I would definitely suggest doing something in the stock market versus just letting it sit in a savings account.
Yeah, but let's hasten to add though there, Aaron, that this is money that you're not going to need for 5 years when you're approaching the stock market.
Yes. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, if there's money you have that you're not going to use, I mean, it's much better sitting here than it is, you know, in a savings account.
Yeah, and the reason the stock market does better is because it has to. It does better than savings over long periods of time over traditional savings accounts. Why? Because it has to. Because if it didn't, no one would put money in it because it's riskier. So the fact that it's riskier is what makes it a return more than traditional savings accounts. And that's why you don't put in more than you're going to put in money you're going to need soon. And you do it very carefully.
Yeah, and you do want to, once again, one of the reasons, like you said, that you want to make sure this is money you're not going to need for 5 years or so is because inevitably there is going to be a crash. We don't know when it's going to happen. It should have happened 2-3 years ago, but it didn't. eventually it's going to happen, and eventually there's going to be a crash. And so part of doing this too is you've got to be able to gut that out. You've got to be able to ride out that crash, and you've got to be able to gut it out and look for the recovery on the other side, because you know that's going to be an issue people are going to run into right now. And then the other thing to think about too, especially Aaron. Well, me too, because this gal did log some short-term capital gains. The other thing to think about as well, when you're trading in and out and buying and selling is that those long-term versus short-term capital gains taxes. So if you have something for a year or less, you are going to pay on those gains, anything that you earn, you are going to pay at your marginal tax rate. So that's something to think about. For long-term capital gains, it's a lower rate. And for a lot of people, especially beginners who are in kind of those like, you know, that 10%, 12%, 15% tax bracket, if you have a long-term capital gain, you don't pay taxes on that. So that's something to think about. If you can get in there and you can hold for a year and a day at least, then that can help you out with those capital gains taxes.
I'll tell you though, Miranda, that's great advice for sure. But I'll tell you what, there are many times when I've held onto a stock trying to get that long-term capital gain rate.
Oh yeah,
and regretted it. You know.
Oh no, I'm not. I'm not saying base it on your taxes. I'm just saying you need to be aware of this when you're doing the thing.
I think this is why this show is good, because if you listen to what Stacy mentions in the beginning here, we talked about natural gas, building homes are being expensive. The U.S. consumer prices rising, so it's slowing down people's shopping. Then you got lumber prices falling. I'm listening to you because it makes me think, well, how should I invest? So if you've got a whole bunch of states saying, okay, we're going to outlaw natural gas building, you know, in homes, well, that should automatically direct you to go, well, where does energy come from? Well, then that leaves you with green energy and nuclear energy. You know, so maybe you should push your stocks behind that. Then you tell me that home building in the U.S. is very expensive. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that right now we're having trouble getting concrete, and we're having trouble getting lumber and everything like that. There is an innovation out there that's probably going to disrupt the entire thing, and that's 3D printed homes. So the second you're able to invest in that, that could be a thing.
Aaron, I am so proud of you, because honestly, this is exactly the way you should be approaching investing. Long-term, looking at trends in the future. And a lot of people, it seems natural, seems simple, but a lot of people don't do that. And you've really picked up that technique, and you're absolutely right.
And right now, like you guys are talking about, the consumer price index is high. That's affected my shopping. And that's no different than Stacy saying, hey, I used to see people, you know, using iPod, so I bought Apple. It's kind of the same thing here, where if lumber is expensive, like even though lumber costs go down, you go to Home Depot right now, a 2x4 still costs $8. It's still expensive because they got to sell those that they bought at a high price. But I'm not doing any projects right now because of it. My parents were going to go buy a used car. They're not doing that now because used cars are up 30-60%. And that's probably across the entire nation.
Yeah, it is. Well, I just said, and the CPI was the cars went up 7%. Used cars went up 7% last month. Yeah, so many people invest based on what's happened in the past, For example, like this. Oh, used car prices went up 7% last month. I should buy AutoNation. You know, instead of thinking about what's going to happen in the future, because what's going to happen is not as many people are going to buy used cars. So AutoNation might be the exact opposite of the stock you're going to buy. And I'm not saying one thing or the other about AutoNation because I don't know the stock, but you know what I'm saying? No, you should be looking forward, not backwards.
This is why I index, because it requires a lot less thoughts.
Oh, stop it. You love thinking.
I like thinking about some things, but it makes my head hurt. But I mean, to a certain degree, right? I mean, same basic thing, right? I mean, you do want to kind of, like Aaron said, you want to kind of think about that and say, okay, well, what could these impacts be in the future? What can we expect? And this is why, you know, most of the time when I buy individual stocks, that they are experiments, they are, you know, and the bulk of it remains indexing, because that way I don't have to think about that. And it really gets down to what your strategy is and what you're comfortable with.
Yep. You're the brakes of our vehicle, Miranda. You're always being sensible and telling people what to do. And you're absolutely right every single time.
I'm such a Debbie Downer.
No, you're not. You're not, though.
We're having fun. Right. Let's pick some stocks. Well, no, kids. Let's just index and move on.
But you, coming from a woman who buys Dogecoin, I mean, for crying out loud.
And I did well off of it. And I did fine off of it.
Yes, you did.
I mean, I missed the top. I mean, I sold before it hit the top, but I still made money, and that's still money in the bank. And I don't regret it. No FOMO.
Good. Yeah, well, you shouldn't have FOMO. You did well. Okay. I am afraid we're out of time, guys, but we're never out of any topic. Dig deeper. You're going to find links to lots more info, and I mean lots of info in our show notes. And remember, if your goal is to make more, to spend less, to retire rich, your online home is moneytalksnews.com. And don't forget to check out Miranda's online home as well. That's Miranda Marquit, MARQUIT.com. If you got a question, comment, or topic you'd like to suggest, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at hello@moneytalksnews.com. That's hello@moneytalksnews.com. And one last thing, if you appreciate what we do, do something for us. Subscribe to this podcast. Takes you 2 seconds, really helps us. So if you like it, show us and subscribe. I'm Stacy Johnson.
And I'm Miranda Marquit.
And I'm waiting for a correction, Aaron Freeman.
Thanks for hanging out with us, everyone. We're going to see you right here next time.